Hello everyone, it's Jimmy.
And Maxwell.
This is Jimmy and Maxwell Show, episode 19.
Right on. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you, Maxwell?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, all right. After last episode, we talked about singer Maxwell,
That's right.
especially his first album. After that, I've been listening to it over and over.
Have you really?
Yeah. Honestly, I realized again the album is masterpiece.
It really is. Yes, I
Yeah,
agree with you
truly a
completely.
masterpiece. And I was blown away by this album.
It was really it stood out when it came out. There was nothing else like it around. And so it was really kind of quite a significant work at the time.
And I think this Maxwell's first album is like a textbook for
Okay.
anyone who wants to make R&B music.
Well, interestingly, I don't know for a fact, but I heard that his band members were also the same members who played with Sade.
The one of the guy joined this album, he was maybe producer of Sade.
I see.
He played guitar or bass on some tracks on this album.
I see. So that explains why there's a similar vibe
Similar
going on.
vibe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this album is massive. All songs are amazing. Especially, I like the bass sound. It's difficult to describe that. The sound placement is perfect for me.
Yes,
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, I think, the bass line and the bass rhythm is what I think really makes a song.
Yeah, especially makes R&B music and soul music, and the
Absolutely.
combination of the bass and drum
Yeah.
is a very key point.
Absolutely. And it's very well thought out. But that's true in all of Maxwell's albums. The bass line is really central and very important to the whole pr the creating the whole atmosphere and mood of the song. Yeah, sometimes you might have like a really resonating bass that creates this austere mood, or you might have like a really funky kind of line that's syncopated, and that gives you like a puts you in a different kind of mood.
Yeah, but for me, it's still difficult to describe in English. So
Well, I
now
have trouble even in English.
that,
Yeah, it's because we're talking about music, and music sometimes escapes words. Sometimes it's hard to articulate what music does. It's a very elusive that way.
And I also want to learn music theory from scratch.
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a really wonderful idea. And then when you learn music theory, you start to listen to music differently.
And nowadays we can check the music theory on YouTube or something very,
That's
very
right.
easily.
There's a musician out, his name is Jacob Collier. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, of course.
And I mean, he's ex very highly respected among top musicians. Herbie Hancock, just like I mean, just anyone you can think of who's like at the top of the tier, he's well respected among them. And when you go to colleges like Berklee College of Music or other schools of music, and you ask them like, who are some artists that you listen to today? Many of them will say Jacob Collier.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, he's a pop artist, but he's such a musical genius, kind of like a Chick Corea in that way. Just like a really musically, he's just like he's not many people people like him are few and far between. You don't find musicians like him every day. He hears all these complex harmonies, and the theory is really amazing. And that's why music students and people who study music love his music, because he's a master of music theory.
Yeah, I can figure out his genius, but I'm not sure why he's genius. Yeah, because I have no idea about music theory, and
Okay.
I can't play any instruments at all.
Okay. Well, there are really a couple of basic things he does. One is he plays with rhythm a lot. So he'll have like a 4-4 against a 5-4 or against a 3-8 or something like that. Another thing he does is he'll use his chord progressions. And sometimes he'll alter the bass. He'll juxtapose a bass line with a chord that doesn't exactly fit, but it creates a new kind of harmony.
That's very interesting. But in my case, I need to learn the basic music
Okay.
theory
Okay.
from scratch.
Okay.
Have you learned the music theory in a school?
Of course, I have a master's degree in music.
Wow. Could you tell me about it?
In a nutshell?
Yeah. You're a vocalist, right?
Yes. I studied vocal performance in university and graduate school. And then
Wow.
I sang with the San Diego Opera for a few years before coming to Japan.
In your school, you learned how to make your voice to become a professional singer.
Yes, I studied vocal performance. So I studied classical singing. I studied opera, Deutschlied, German songs, chanson, French songs, Italian arias. So my focus was on my main instrument is my voice. So yes, I did study how to produce sound, how to sing in different styles, mainly in class for classical music. So that would be either opera or art songs.
Wow, that's really intriguing for me. And now that I'm done with TOEIC test, so I want to start working on.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to start working on my English all over again, especially for me, pronunciation and intonation. Yeah, of course, I know some people say it is that enough for us to communicate in English with like a lowest minimum level. But I don't think so. We should strive for accurate pronunciation and intonation.
Yes, definitely.
Yep.
Most definitely. No, I was just going to say, being a vocal student, a voice major, I think I was always, because I had to sing in Italian, German, French, and sometimes Russian. In order to do that, you have to really have a keen ear.
Keen ear.
Ear, yes. So it means you have to really pay attention carefully to how different syllables and vowels and how to produce different very small nuances in speech. So having said that, being a singer, one important thing is pronunciation. It's extremely important. Yeah, you not only even if you're singing in your own native language. And the reason is because when you're singing, it's not always easy for the listener to catch your words. So you have to over articulate sometimes, you have to over enunciate. Sometimes in order for the listeners to hear what you're saying or what you're singing.
Yeah, that totally makes sense today. And recently I started taking pronunciation lesson from a Japanese pronunciation coach.
Oh, good.
And I bought this book.
I've never seen it before.
Okay, let me
But it
introduce
looks
it.
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, the title is ゴスペル式発音の声を良くする本 written by 木梨信久。
Okay.
He's a singer and pronunciation coach. He's a gospel singer, Japanese gospel singer. On the beginning of the part of this book, he introduced how to breathe
Okay, very important in singing,
to
yes.
improve our English. But honestly, it's pretty difficult for me. Chest, how to resonate our chest.
Oh, wait, so how to breathe in order to improve your English or in order to improve your singing?
English.
That's interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Wow.
Now I'm very intrigued. I think I'd like to read this book.
Yeah, it might be common. We Japanese people speak Japanese. We use only our mouth. On the other hand, people who are speaking English use like a throat and chest and bottom of the body, like a stomach.
Yeah, perhaps there's more support from the whole body when speaking English, but I don't know. I mean,
Yeah.
sound is
Okay.
but I hear what you're saying. Yes. Especially like consonants aren't as strong in Japanese as they are in English. I saw something on YouTube recently where the woman says, "This is a pen," and
Yeah.
the P is very plosive. She's re really blowing out a lot of air. Whereas when you articulate the P in Japanese, it's quite soft.
Yes, yeah, this book also enters this episode, as you said. We Japanese English learners' P sound is weaker. Yeah, so we need to with a breathe from chest.
That's right. Okay. Well, actually, I used to direct a gospel choir for a number of years, and there are a lot of common vowels, consonants that Japanese struggle with. As you know, R and L, R and L.
La, what?
Yes, and also the Y, y. Yeah, because it's not articulated very well, it sounds like if you say year or ear, a lot of times it sounds like the same word. So you really have to articulate the Y sound. Yeah.
Yeah, I can figure out what difference is. Yeah, what you said, yeah, but it's super difficult for me to
So one exercise I had my students just like yeah. Of course I know yeah, or doing something like that and alternating that with a w, because that's another difficult one. The W sound is w w.
Yeah.
So yawa 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 yawa. There are lots of different vocal exercises you can do to move, get your mouth activated.
So we need to practice by ourselves. Yeah, and what?
Or just wah by itself. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. And then you can alternate them. Yeah. And then add a L in there. Wah, wah, la, ra. And then the R. Yeah, you can mix all kinds of different consonants when you're to get activate your mouth and get the muscles in your face activated.
Yeah, but now I can't move my mouth naturally to make what
Okay.
sound the yes sound. It's my
Yes, I know.
muscle.
See, this is muscle memory. And when we speak English, we really activate our facial muscles. And I think the point that you were making is that when you speak Japanese, you don't really involve as much a lot of the facial muscles, so the sounds aren't as strongly articulated. For example, the P is very soft, the T is soft. All of these sounds are soft compared to English articulation.
Wow. Maybe this book also introduce things that you mentioned. and how to improve our mouth muscle, especially P sound, double sound. This book includes the all content you said.
Well, I'm gonna check out the book after this episode. But yeah, most singers or vocal coaches are aware of those issues that especially that Japanese singers might struggle with. I've been very fortunate to coach quite a few singers in Japan, and so it's always common issues that we come across.
How to make chest sound? Chest sound.
Okay. Now, okay, the important thing is and this is hard to like summarize in like a few minutes because this is like this takes years of practice, but or at least months of practice, but when you breathe, you're pulling in air, okay? And the way you do that is you lower your diaphragm, which is rests above the stomach. Okay, so and that draws the air into your chest and it causes your stomach to come out. It causes your stomach to expand. But you're not, so you're pulling in the air by lowering the diaphragm. Diaphragm sits like this and you push it like that. The stomach, your guts kind of stick out and then your chest cavity fills with air. And that is a solid, firm way to start singing. Yeah, it's very difficult to explain on a podcast.
Pulling air from the nose,
Yeah, breathe in through the nose.
blowing the nose,
Allow the air to set. Expand your chest.
fulfilled air.
Yeah. Oh, important. Another important thing is you don't lift up your shoulders.
Oh, okay.
Keep your shoulders at rest, expand your chest, allow your stomach to feel, not feel, but like stick out basically. And that's the singing position. If you ever have a chance to watch opera singers or professional singers, you might try to observe what they're doing when between breaths, and how they take their breaths. I was just going to say, even when you're out of breath, your chest is still expanded. Never allow your chest to co collapse completely because that's your reserve air. You need that.
Wow. It must be difficult. What are the differences between opera singer and gospel singer to make their voices? Is it the same?
Obviously, they're completely different styles of singing.
Wow.
When you sing gospel, when you sing classical music, you allow the sound to resonate in the cavities that are in your face. You have some in your cheekbones. You have some like around your nose, nasal cavities. When you're singing gospel, there are different ways to sing gospel, obviously. Unfortunately, most gospel singers don't sing in a very healthy way. And so what happens is they oftentimes end up damaging their voice.
Damaging a voice.
Yes, because many gospel singers sing from the throat, and they allow stress to build up in their neck. It causes unnecessary tension, and they damage their vocal cords in the process. So this is why a lot of times, gospel singers have this awesome raspy voice, but then if they keep singing that way when they're 40, 50 years old, they might start losing their voice. So it's important to even when singing gospel music to support the sound, to breathe deeply and to not grind, when you produce the sound, not tighten too much in the throat. Yeah, everyone has a different build. Everyone has a different body and a different throat, different voice. And so some people can are able to sing improperly for a long time, but other people, it affects their voice and they lose their voice. There are so many singers who that's happened to. Mariah Carey lost her voice for quite a while, if you remember. Because and then she had to go back and retrain her voice and sing in a healthy way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for giving us very, very informative lesson today. And
It's hard to do it in 20 minutes.
I'll give it a shot and trust that it will work. Yeah.
Okay, but you know what? Let's have a voice lesson sometime.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Yeah, thank you, man. See you next time, Maxwell.
Sounds good. Take good care.